Ladies and gentlemen, we are back with the Five Star Podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Little. I'm here with my buddy, Rod Hicks. How's it going, Rod?
How you doing, Nathan? Thanks for having me.
There's not a lot of opportunities for people just to run their mouth about MMA and wrestling around here.
But, yeah, that's especially not intelligent conversations. It's not a very well-educated crowd here in Eastern Kentucky.
Well, I've never claimed to be anything other than a fan with a microphone, but I consider myself pretty educated in the matter. I've been tapped out a few times, so that's all I care about. But big news coming out today is Ronda Rousey versus Amanda Nunes for the title. Rousey's been out of action for about a year now after losing to Holly Holm. A lot of people kind of complaining online that she's been out a year and she gets a title shot right off the bat, even though that Dana White said a long time ago that she was going to get a title shot right off the bat. What do you think about the move?
We talk about title shots in the UFC. I mean, let's not the number one contender is not always the person that gets the title shot. Dan Henderson just fought for the title. Lesnar got hot-shotted against Randy Couture. There's been a long history of, title shots that people may or may not deserve. But however, people, especially in this day and age with the internet, when someone gets knocked off the pedestal, it's like how quickly they forget. Ronda Rousey, one of the most dominant champions in the UFC, definitely the only dominant women's champion. The belt's been passed around like a hot potato since she lost it. Of course she deserves a title shot. Anderson Silva got an immediate title shot. Anytime a long reigning champion loses, I think that they should be allowed to fight for the title when they come back.
Well, I'm kind of in the same boat, and you mentioned that the title shot doesn't always go to the number one contender, but it always goes to someone who can draw money, and that's what it's about. And I look at that division, and I see that, well, assuming that Rousey is not going to move up and fight Cyborg, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but if she's going to fight, for the title, I think if she's going to be in that division, the only money matches right now are her and Holly Holm. Which Holm has lost her last two in a row. Then you've got Miesha Tate, who beat Holm and dropped it to Nunes while they're playing hot potato with the title. But that's a story we've already seen, and Rousey has handled her easily twice. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if anybody really wants to see that again.
I know one of the things that the matchmakers, especially Joe Silva, always said. It's not his job to make champions. It's his job to make contenders. And I think the boat that the UFC got themselves in is Rousey was so dominant for so long, that other, number 2 through 10, it was kind of, if you go by MMA math, everybody had beat everybody and, nobody had that perfect record. So you really didn't have a solid contender. Now with Amanda Nunes, you have a champion that, as far as a mainstream draw, if she fights anybody other than Ronda Rousey, you're looking at sub 300,000 pay-per-view buys. So it makes the most sense financially for everyone involved to give Rousey that title shot. And as far as maybe coaxing Ronda back into the octagon, I don't know if you can draw up a more tailor-made opponent that would play into Ronda's style than Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, Nunes is going to run right in there to her, and I think with Ronda, we talk about her, her arm bars and her, her ability in the octagon, but she's a world-class judoka as well, and I think that you get a little too overzealous and run in on Ronda, and she can quickly throw a toss at you, and then you're in her world. But I think if Holly Holm wouldn't have dropped the belt, I mean, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. If she was still the champion, I mean, people would be clamoring for a Holly Holm champion Ronda Rousey match, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even now, you know, a lot of the people are commenting like, oh, Ronda should have to fight Holm before she fights for the title, blah, blah, blah. It's like you said earlier, you know, Holly Holm's lost two in a row. And you brought up a good point about Ronda's judo. A lot of people, like I said, immediately just dismissed Ronda after the Holly Holm loss. And people even now are trying to say, oh, Amanda Nunes, she's a great striker. You know, she's going to do the same thing to her that Holly Holm did. When you look at, and I know the old adage, styles make fights, but not just the styles, but just the actual fighter of Holly Holm. I know on paper she doesn't have the big reach advantage, you know, that it actually played out. In MMA, the reach advantage, they measure your wingspan. Like if you put your arms out like the old Michael Jordan poster, which really isn't a good measuring stick because, you know, you're getting the whole length of the back and shoulders, and someone that's thicker is going to have a long wingspan. But if you measure it from armpit to fingertip, you know, it's going to come out different. And with Holly Holm, she was tall, she was lanky, she was a southpaw, a professional boxer. And if you go back and watch that fight, the very first straight left that Holly Holm throws, you know, hits Ronda right in the mouth. Immediately her mouth is open, her nose is probably broken right off the bat. And she just kind of continued to stay on the outside and pick her apart. And when Ronda did get the clinch, that, you know, she could set the throws up for. In judo, you know, your body and your hips work like a piston. And, you know, you want to get your hips under your opponent's hips, push from the knees, and do your throw. And Ronda had a hard time. You know, she couldn't throw Holly because with Holly's legs were so long, Ronda got that body lock. And when she went to try to pop her hips and go over, you know, Holly could still touch the ground. And, you know, I think with Amanda Nunes, her body type, her fighting style, that, you know, I think Ronda is going to win it easily. And then hopefully Holly Holm can pick up a win or two, and then we can see that rematch.
Yep. I mean, I don't know if Holly Holm doesn't start winning some fights, I don't know if we'll ever get to see the rematch unless, you know, if Ronda gets the title back, unless she just says, okay, well, I want that fight, and they make it happen. Because I still think there's money to be drawn there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what happens. I think, you know, the one question that everyone had about Ronda Rousey up until the Holly Holm match was no one had ever really tested her chin and how well she could take a, you know, some really good striking, because no one had ever really touched her. And the first time we see that, we saw her, you know, she got rocked. And was it a fluke? You know, Holmes lost two in a row, or was it just, you know, you said, you know, styles make fights. Is it just a situation where Holly Holmes' style is just too much for what Ronda brings to the table? I do think Nunes is a better opponent for Rousey, in the sense that, you know, like, you know, her body type and what she brings to the table. But I think Nunes is another talented striker as well. And if the question for me is if she can get in and land some bombs on Rousey, and take her down that way. Because I think if she can't do that, then it's going to be the same Ronda Rousey that we saw be dominant for a long time. Because if I'm not mistaken, Ronda Rousey is the only women's bantamweight to even successfully defend the championship.
Yeah. She was the inaugural champion, and then, you know, it was passed from Holly to Misha to Amanda. And you know, you talk about Holly's success against Ronda with Holly's you know, size, lankiness, if you will. She could stay at a distance. And, you know, stay just outside of the pocket and strike Ronda. And I actually made this comment. Somebody asked me my prediction for that Holly Holm and Ronda Rousey fight. And I told them, I said, which I never saw Holly picking her apart the way she did, but in women's MMA, you know, other than Chris Cyborg, you don't see a lot of girls that have what they call that one strike knockout power. You know, they'll wobble them, they'll ground and pound them, they'll submit them, but you rarely see a one strike knockout. And I was telling people before, I said, the thing with Holly Holm is the one, she had knocked people out before with that high kick. And, you know, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a woman, if you weigh 100 pounds, when you kick somebody shin to chin, you know, you're going to turn their lights out. And I thought that was Holly's one chance to beat Ronda. And, you know, like I said, I didn't ever foresee her setting it up the way she did, but, you know, she definitely connected. Now, obviously Amanda Nunes trains at American Top Team. I'm sure she can throw, you know, every strike in the world, but to do that, she's going to have to get in to range. And like I said, I just think with the size where these girls are going to be closer to size, you know, when she closes the distance, Ronda is going to engage that clinch, that body lock. And, you know, like I said, I think Amanda in the UFC, I think she's lost twice. I know she lost to Kat Zingano and maybe Alexis Davis or Edwards. Can't remember one of the girls Ronda had beat, but they were both after they took her down. And I think she'd been submitted and TKO'd as well. So she's susceptible to all of Ronda's strengths. So,
yep. I mean, Ronda, it's been so long since we've seen her fight. You know, the only thing that's in everybody's mind is her taking that big high kick and then just crumbling. But you know, if she if Holly Holm had that, you know, we mentioned that reach advantage, Holly Holm could keep her at a distance and kind of do what she wanted to and picked her apart. Amanda Nunes is not going to have that option with Ronda, so she has to get in there. But I mean, she's good. You know, Nunes good jiu-jitsu as well. So if she does get in and Ronda does get that body lock, use her judo and get her on the ground, Nunes could, I see him putting up more of a fight than a lot of Rousey's prior opponents. I think it's going to be a good fight. I also think that Rousey also wins the fight though, and I don't think it'll go past the second round, maybe third.
Yeah, well,
I think it goes in the second, maybe first.
Yeah, if it goes, and that's the other thing I was going to bring up about Nunes, which, you know, obviously I'm, you know, sitting on my couch right now, so I can't talk about someone's cardio, but Amanda Nunes, extremely fast starter. We saw that against Misha Tate. We've seen it in all of her fights. She kind of reminds me of like a Vitor Belfort, where she's going to come out, she's going to unload, but then she gasses. And, you know, in the fights that she has lost, they have been second, third round where, you know, she was fatigued. And, you know, we're looking at a potential 5-round fight. So the later that thing goes, again, I think that just, you know, plays more into Rousey's strength. I hope that Ronda seeks out not necessarily another camp, but I'm not sure that Edmund, the little Eddie Munster looking trainer of hers, I don't think that is the best bet for her striking coach. She was exposed against Holly Holm, and I would like to see her either bring in a Dwayne Ludwig, or, you know, someone with a high caliber, you know, striking pedigree to kind of try to fine tune her head movement, because that's the one thing I see across the board in all of MMA is head movement. You know, you don't see it like you see at a high level of boxing or kickboxing.
Yeah, and she definitely needs to look for something with that camp. I think Edmund, Ronda Rousey was kind of his golden child, and she really she got exposed and he got exposed a little bit there. We'll see what happens. Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about Rousey's cardio either, but we've never, I mean, what's the latest we've ever seen her? And, you know, I think maybe one of the Tate fights went to the third round. Is that right?
Yeah, or? I was gonna say I believe the second Misha Tate fight went to the third round. But yeah, I mean, even in the Holly Holm fight, like I said, of course, you know, getting punched in the mouth will, you know, especially if you get your nose broke, whatever. I mean, anybody's gonna get tired the more they get hit. But you know, I don't know if it was an adrenaline dump, if it was cumulative damage, but you know, Ronda looked severely gassed just minutes into that Holly Holm fight. So you know, you're right. You know, cardio could be a factor for Ronda as well.
Yep, and when you get tagged in the face like that, in the nose, and you start breathing through your mouth, you use a lot more energy like that. And you also, it also hurts a lot more when you get punched with your mouth open versus closed. So we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be a good fight. But there's there's a second half of the Ronda Rousey saga right now, and that's maybe a possible super fight with Chris Cyborg. Cyborg actually went to Rousey's gym the other day to try to challenge her. The Ronda had mentioned in the past that she wants Cyborg. Ronda had also mentioned that Cyborg, she was worried that she was on steroids. Cyborg been tested by USADA for a long time now. Looks like she's as clean as anyone else in the division. So, do you think?
Well,
go ahead.
I'm going to stop you right there. First of all, you can't say she's clean as anybody in the division because she's not even in the division.
Okay. Chris Cyborg. That's right.
Yeah. Chris Cyborg is a 145-pound champion in Invicta. You know, she cuts probably 35 pounds to make 145. They did these little experiments. I think she's done two times now, dropping to 140. And, I mean, you know, we've heard for years, oh, it's physically impossible. She'll die. It's this, it's that. She's not ever going to fight at 135 pounds. Yay, she's passing all of her drug tests. That's great. You can just, you know, I'm not saying she's on drugs now, but the benefits that a woman would have from using anabolic steroids for who knows how many years, you know, that shoot-a-box team, if you look back in the Pride days with Vandalay, Shogun, her ex-husband, Cyborg Santos. I mean, that was an anabolic factory. So, you know, you take a woman who's probably ran something for, you know, 4 to 5 years, just the physiological, I butcher that word, but you know what I mean? Like that muscle mass is going to stick around for a while.
Yeah.
So she's going to have an advantage. And I think that is what ruins her credibility. You know, when she's crying about these super fights or wanting to fight these 135-pound girls. You know, I mean, she kind of did it to herself by bulking and doing what she did for so long. Now she physically just, you know, cannot make the weight. And I don't see what Ronda Rousey has to prove or, you know, it does nothing for her legacy. You know, you talk about a big money fight. I don't think Ronda Rousey's hurting for money. Cyborg needs that way more than Ronda Rousey does. So I just, again, I don't want to see the UFC force Cyborg to even cut to 140 anymore because, again, there's no 140-pound division. So to me, all the Cyborg talk is just that. It's talk. It's fantasy. But I mean, it makes zero sense for Ronda Rousey or any other 135-pound female fighter to take that fight.
Strong words there. I mean, Ronda definitely doesn't need the money. I'd say she probably makes more money outside of UFC with the movies and what all else she's doing. I don't know the exact number on it, but you know, fighting. You know, she's headline pay-per-view, so she's probably making pretty good money in the UFC. But, you know, I don't think she has a whole lot to gain either, other than the possibility, and that's always in the back of everyone's minds, just the possibility of silencing some critics. But, you know, you when it comes to the steroid, you can look steroids issue, you can look at Cyborg, and she doesn't pass the smell test.
No.
As most people would say. And you and I've seen pictures of her when she used to have, when before she started bulking, and it's definitely there's it looks like two different people.
Oh yeah, I mean the facial structure, and then you get into the bone mass, the bone density. I mean, like I said, that those are long term effects, and not only that, just the years of being able to train harder and train longer, because you know your body's going to recover more through those anabolics.
Cyborg threw out the fact that she would do the fight for free. How do you think that's a load of crap as well?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. Nobody is fighting anybody for free. Cyborg has been making, and obviously you can probably tell I'm not the biggest Cyborg fan. I think she kind of broke my heart when she mounted Gina Carano and beat her into submission. That kind of just soured me on the whole deal. But you know, like I said, she has, you know, she had that whole fiasco where she hired Tito Ortiz as her manager. You know, she gets on, or whoever handles her Twitter or Instagram or even on the underground forum, just constantly, you know, she's definitely subscribing to the theory that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Because that's all she's talked about. And, you know, we're going on 3 or 4 years now, maybe even longer than that, since the UFC absorbed Strikeforce. I've gained and lost 40 pounds both ways since then. So if Chris Cyborg was serious about fighting at 135 pounds, you know, rather than cutting 30 to 45 pounds of weight the week of, you know, she could have dieted. You know, I've heard the stories that she runs 7 miles a day and or more. You know, she could have gotten her lean body mass down healthy over the last 4 or 5 years, and she's chosen not to do that.
So, and here's the money question, and I'll go ahead and tell you what I think before I ask you, is if they do concoct some kind of super fight at 140 between these two, what's the outcome? I think Cyborg probably hurts Ronda at 140. What do you think?
Well, I did used to think that, and I watched Cyborg's last fight against the complete unknown girl, a girl fighting, you know, the girl looks like she could, you know, fight well below 135, and that girl hung in there. That girl was in the clinch. Even with her back against the cage, you know, she was able to get underhooks and spin Cyborg. If the Chris Cyborg that fought a few weeks ago fights that same fight against Ronda Rousey and initiates that clinch, she's going for a ride. And, you know, even if you go back, and I know, you know, this was years ago, but you go back to that Gina Carano fight. At one point in the clinch, Cyborg basically falls down and or pulls Gina Carano on top of her. Carano lands full mount on the Cyborg. And I can tell you right now, if Ronda Rousey lands in a full mount position on Chris Cyborg.
Armbar
City. Yeah.
Interesting to talk about, you know, as far as MMA concerned, I guess that's our as wrestlers would call it, fantasy booking. We'll see what happens with it. As far as Cyborg Rousey, I don't think we see it anytime soon. If we do, but if we do, I think it'll definitely happen at 140. We'll see. I think they said that Cyborg is immediately. They say she's immediately hooked up to IVs after she weighs in at 140, and it's just that's the most she can cut. So
yeah. Well, I mean, even now, there's an IV banned just in the last few months. So they do the earlier weigh-ins, around 10 a.m. now. But you cannot rehydrate with an IV since USADA. They test for the plastic that comes from the IV. A lot of people use that for blood doping. So yeah, she can't even rehydrate with an IV anymore. So that's, you're looking at very, very, you know, serious, you know, possible death. You know, you look at Daniel Cormier, who went into kidney failure, I think cutting either for the Olympics or the NCAA championships one year. And like that was a big point about him going to 205, is he couldn't cut the water weight. He had to diet down because his body can't handle that stress anymore.
Crazy stuff that these guys go through to cut that weight. I remember when I was in college, there was a wrestler that was walking around with just a cup all day, and he would just spit mm-hmm. into it, hoping
yeah.
just to cut that last couple pounds and do whatever they could. I mean, it's wild what they do to their bodies, but a little more UFC stuff. We also got UFC 205 coming up, which is, you know, you and I were talking before we started here about how it's on paper the biggest card ever, headlined by Eddie Alvarez and Conor McGregor. McGregor, you know, looking to take that belt, and if he does, what do you think happens? He's the current. He's already champ at a lower weight, and they, you know, you've got to defend these belts, and they typically don't let one guy hold two belts. And you got Nate Diaz just basically waiting for whenever Conor McGregor decides to fight him again. What do you think comes out of this?
Well, you know, first of all, if Conor wins, you know, he's going to make history. He'll be the first fighter to actively hold two belts in two different weight classes. I know Randy Couture and BJ Penn did it, you know, but those were different title runs, but he would be the first to simultaneously hold two belts in two weight classes. So that would be a huge deal. You know, Dana's already went on record saying if he wins, he's got to give one of them up. For me, I mean, I don't know what is best for Conor. You know, I mean, obviously he's bulked up. You know, he's had two fights at 170. Now he's having a fight at 155. And, I mean, the cat looked like Skeletor when he weighed in at 145 pounds. So, you know, he may not want to cut that extreme weight anymore. But on the flip side, 155 is a murderer's row.
Oh, yeah.
And on top of that, it's very wrestler heavy. If there's anything that can be shown as maybe a chink in the armor of McGregor, it's his wrestling and maybe even possibly his jiu-jitsu. So I don't know if he would want to, you know, hang out at 155 to face the grappler heavy. You got Khabib, I think, fighting at 205, who, you know, he's on a win streak. You got Michael Johnson, who just laid out Poirier, but is also a pretty heavy wrestler. Tony Ferguson, definitely wrestler oriented. So, you know, I mean, there's probably more money at 155 if he can continue to win. And then you still got Jose Aldo at 145. You know, I mean, threatening to quit, wanting his release, this, that, and the other. But I mean, that's probably the next big money fight if you look at the division. Or at either division, that's probably the money fight at 145 or 155 for Conor.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of money at 155, but I also think that basically anything, it seems like anything Conor McGregor does is money right now.
Oh yeah,
I mean he's playing the game, and he's perfected it, in the sense of he can say the things that gets people riled up. It gets, you know, Dana White kind of called his bluff there once, because I think that when he threatened to retire or claimed that he was retiring, and Dana White, you know, took him off the card because he wouldn't do his media stuff. You know, Dana White did call his bluff, but at the same time, when it came time for the Nate Diaz fight to happen, you know, it held its own on a card that wasn't as big as the UFC 200 card, but
yeah,
I mean, made as much as money as he could have in the situation.
Yeah, I mean, well, now, yes, Dana called his bluff on UFC 200, but now let's face facts. UFC 200, you know, that's the equivalent of, you know, you can't even say WrestleMania, you know, other than UFC 100, you know, there had never been an event that big. So, you know, UFC 200 was going to do, you know, X amount of pay-per-view buys, even if it was me and you fight in the main event. You know, people were going to buy it because it was UFC 200. Then you fast forward a month and a half later, 201, 202, whatever it may be, you got Connor and Nate Diaz that did more buys than UFC 200. So, I mean, you know, Connor, you know, he sells pay-per-views. And again, if you're being honest, look at that 205 card the day before the press conference. You know, you're looking at Wonderboy Thompson and Tyrone Woodley main eventing. You're looking at the 115-pound women's title. I mean, it was a solid card, but you have to remember the UFC made a lot of promises to New York. They spent a lot of money lobbying to have MMA regulated in New York. So, I mean, you know, they had to deliver. And, you know, anything short of a Conor McGregor main event and, you know, UFC 205 is just another card.
What do you think happens with McGregor-Alvarez? I mean, I think that's a – I think it's a good fight, but McGregor's proven that he can go with anyone. Eddie Alvarez is been doing it a little longer and with just about as much success, to be honest. What do you think Conor McGregor gets the second belt?
The fan in me definitely, I mean, I love Eddie Alvarez. You know, I've been following Eddie Alvarez since he fought for Bodog many, many moons ago. But if Conor can get into Eddie's head and make this an ugly slugfest like the Nate Diaz fight, you know, that's where Conor's best chance is. Eddie is a stud wrestler. You know, he kind of has the old Chuck Liddell game plan where he normally uses his wrestling to keep the fight standing. But now, if you go back and watch the Anthony Pettis fight, you know, Pettis and McGregor, Pettis is probably a little more kick-heavy than McGregor, but, I mean, Eddie just grappled him. You know, it wasn't even close. It was ugly. Kind of the same way that Clay Guida did Anthony Pettis. So, you know, I mean, if Eddie's smart, you know, he could use his wrestling. He could put him against the cage. You know, obviously Conor has showed either something about, you know, his body or his fight style, he has trouble past that 15-minute mark. You know, he gassed against Nate Diaz the first time, looked like he was out of the fight in the third round there in their second fight. So, you know, Eddie may want to drag that out into deep waters, but, you know, on the feet, anybody can knock anybody out. And the speed is what's going to be the difference on the feet. You know, I mean, Conor is accurate and, you know, his boxing IQ is very, very high. So if Eddie overcommits, you know, if his footwork's sloppy, Conor's going to pick up on that. And, you know, that's, to me, that's where Conor has the best chance of winning that fight.
Yeah, Conor, obviously, world-class striker. His issues with Diaz came with gassing. It looked like you mentioned Eddie maybe pushing him against the cage. Diaz looked like he had McGregor, you know, out on his feet a couple times against the cage in their second fight. Never could finish it. So it should be, I mean, this is a fight that I'm really looking forward to, and I think it. I mean, it could be one of those that goes the distance. Could be one that goes all five rounds. We'll see what they do with it. We mentioned Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, another fight, but Diaz McGregor 3 is almost, I think it's it's just inevitable because the money in that is going to be it's going to be right up there with UFC 202. Do you think McGregor says he wants it to happen at 155? Do you think it Do you think Diaz has fought at 155 before? Do you think it's still competitive down there for Diaz?
Well, I mean, again, if you go back, Nate Diaz is a 155-pound fighter. The reason their first fight was at 170 is it was short notice, and Nate Diaz could not cut to 155. You know, Nate Diaz, you know, if you remember kind of a midway point in his career there, he tried to go up to 170. I believe it was maybe Rory McDonald kind of ragdolled him. Yeah, I don't know if he had one or two fights, but you could tell that, you know, he at that point in time, he was outsized against the top 170 fighters, you know, in the UFC. You know, he's had two fights at 170, but that was against a natural 145-pound fighter in Conor McGregor. So, you know, you got to look at what does Nate Diaz do in the interim. You know, the Diaz brothers are notorious for, you know, sitting out and, you know, not wanting to fight until they get the fight they want. But, I mean, again, Conor McGregor doesn't need Nate Diaz as much as Nate Diaz needs Conor McGregor. I mean, now, both Diaz brothers are legitimized stars now. But, you know, I mean, Nate Diaz cannot sit at home and let Conor McGregor fight Eddie Alvarez, potentially fight Jose Aldo. You know, Nate Diaz is going to have to take a few fights, and he's either going to take them at 155 or 170. If he takes them at 170, you know, like I said, he doesn't have the best record at that weight in the UFC. And not only that, but if he takes those fights and he loses a couple, you know, let's just say Conor McGregor goes out there and knocks out Eddie Alvarez, you know, gets another win under his belt. If Nate Diaz loses one or two, then all of a sudden that fight's not very appealing. So, you know, I would prefer to see it at 155. You know, Nate probably wouldn't have the cardio that he had at 170 without having to cut. But at the end of the day, man, you put those two guys next to each other, you can tell that they're two weight classes apart. And I'm not a big fan of, you know, there's weight classes for a reason. You know, obviously people can manipulate water weight and, you know, Nate Diaz will probably only weigh 155 pounds for a few seconds, you know, if he makes it. Whereas, you know, Conor McGregor didn't even walk around at 170. So, you know, if there is a third fight, I would like to see it at 155, but again, I'm skeptical of that because, like I said, Conor McGregor doesn't need that trilogy. I mean, he wanted to avenge his loss. He did that. So, you know, if I'm Conor McGregor, I'm looking at 155ers and 145ers before I'm thinking of a Nate Diaz trilogy.
McGregor himself did say that it was going to be a trilogy, but again, McGregor's always looking for the biggest payday, I think. And right now, he's got some big title fights that he can possibly do. You know, even if he wins the 155 title and drops the 145 title, you know, maybe Dana sets a match up for that. Aldo gets the title. If he ever drops the 155 title, I think McGregor's always got a shot to immediately go down and compete for the 145 title. So he's got plenty of money fights ahead of him. We'll see. We'll just see where it goes.
Hey Nathan, but before we move on to wrestling, I would be remiss if I didn't mention some of the great MMA gyms we have here in the state. The ones I have trained at specifically. In Winchester, Kentucky, there's a Bluegrass Budokai. Right here in Somerset, Kentucky, we have Adversity Training Center with Ian Lawler. We have East West Karate with Jeff Turner. Of course, in Lexington, you have Four Seasons, Reaction MMA. You got Scott Hope with Corbin BJJ. You know, there's great martial arts academies and gyms all over the state. I'm sure there's plenty out there in Eastern Kentucky. And I just want to encourage men, women, children, everyone. You know, I'm an avid supporter of local business, and I'm an avid supporter of the martial arts community. Don't think of these gyms as quote unquote fight gyms. All these gyms are family friendly. They have kids programs, and I cannot think of a better activity for young children, boys and girls, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, any of that stuff. You know, they're going to get physical fitness. They're going to get life lessons. They're going to get just that right mindset that's going to prepare them for the rest of their life. So I just encourage everybody to, you know, seek out your local martial arts and enroll your kids. And, you know, it's great for everyone.